Welcome to Awake to Oneness Radio. I am Caroline Chang, your host. The mission of Awake to Oneness Radio is to inspire the world to awaken to the universal truth of oneness. Science is now teaching us that everything is energy, the same energy, and that energy is interconnected and interdependent, and it actually vibrates at different frequencies. So it's the same, everything is the same energy vibrating at different frequencies. Now, this is science teaching us this now, but spirituality and ancient wisdom has been teaching us the truth of oneness for eons. And the science, quantum physics, is over 100 years old. So it's not even new science. This is something that everybody should know by now, that we are literally all one. And what you do to another person, you are actually doing to another aspect of yourself, and also another aspect of God. So when humanity awakens to the universal truth of oneness, there will be peace on earth. Today's show topic is We Touched Heaven with Claudia Edge. Welcome, Claudia.
Oh my goodness. I loved that. That was awesome.
Thank you so much. So Claudia, we met via, phone conversation and email over a year ago, and you have this wonderful book out, Touched Heaven. Now this book was published about a year ago, May of last year, and it's an award-winning book. I truly inspire everybody to get a copy, and little old me actually wrote a chapter in this book. So this makes me an official published author. Thanks to Claudia. Thank you so much. Now, Claudia, please, I've gotten to know you a little bit over the past year, but introduce yourself to our guests and our listeners and let us know your journey, your spiritual journey to awakening.
Awesome. Before we get started, and you held up the book, and yes, we were talking about, you were talking about pictures and how words, but a picture can inspire, can set the mood, what is the saying?
A picture speaks a thousand words.
Right. Like that. Yes. Right. Yes. So this picture with the hands reaching up. This has been my life. And it makes me, want to cry, because I feel like I have always been, teach me. I want to learn. I want to, I want to follow. I want to do what was my purpose? What is my reason to be here? And I want very hard to fulfill it.
Yes.
And so just because we were talking about pictures, when I found that picture for this book, because there are many. There are many, many hands reaching up, and your audience, thank you for being here with us, because we're all searching, we're all seekers, we're all learning, we're all at different vibrations and different.
Yes, exactly. And it is all about vibration. I share that with my listeners all the time. But now give us your backstory, as they say.
All right. Okay. Well, even as a kid, I knew there was something more. I was raised in a religious family, and I just was really fascinated with the afterlife, what happens after. My mother had 9 brothers and sisters. She was the youngest. And so as a kid, I went to a lot of funerals, and it was just like, I saw the grief and the sorrow that, that we go through when we lose somebody. It's no matter how much you know or believe or have faith that there is another side, that there is more, there's still that physical loss.
Yes.
There's still, you can no longer go to the movies or share a milkshake together or anything.
Right.
That's real.
Yes.
So, for one thing, your program, how wonderful that you're offering a service to those of us who grieve. And my real grief, when I was 16, I lost my dad. I adored him. He was a wonderful person, and he went to work one day and was killed at work, a horrible accident. And, you know, you just never get a chance to say that goodbye or anything. Yeah. And I searched for him in a way of looking, sorry to be graphic, audience,
that's okay,
but looking at him in the casket, to see that he wasn't there. I mean, it was his body, but he was not there. And I say that, and it might sound silly to some, because yeah, he's passed, he's gone, but you know, the body's no longer alive, but I mean, really not there. And I understood that I was looking at his persona or his overalls, the uniform that he got to put on.
I like that you say overalls. I like the color of the spacesuit.
Here on this wonderful adventure.
Yeah.
And we need these wonderful bodies that were gifted, and they are a gift of love. And, you know, I'm looking at him going, where did you go? Mm. What are you doing now? I miss you so much. Do you miss me?
Mm.
You know, I wanted those questions answered. And so I have been studying near-death experiences. Now, I lost him in 1969.
Okay.
So even the term near-death experience had not...
of course, not even.
It was not even uttered yet.
Yes.
And Dr. Raymond Moody, and there were several others that started writing books in the 70s.
I've had Dr. Raymond on the show, yes.
Oh, you lucky, lucky.
Yes.
He reviewed the book.
Yes, he did.
Called it terrific.
But, well, so, I just want to interject right there, not to interrupt. Stay right where you are. But when it comes to funerals, I have to say this. Me personally, because I know that's their spacesuit. Mm-hmm. I don't go over to the casket and look. Because I literally, this is no lie. When I'm at a funeral, I'm literally looking around in the corners, up in the corners. I'm like, okay, I know you're here, but where are you in this room? Their spirit, their soul is right there in that room somewhere. And some people have the gift that they can actually see. So I'm not looking at the casket or the body. I'm looking up. I'm always looking up in the corners of the room and wondering what corner or where they are in the room.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love it. I'm right there with you.
Yes.
You know, and even in my not knowing for sure, I looked for him as neighbors were sitting in our living room and that, and I was looking beyond the couch and whatnot.
Right. Yes.
And I had, so it was something born within me that understood that he loved us so much. He wasn't just gone. He was there somewhere.
Yes.
And so,
yes.
But I grew up, kind of studying and looking for those answers. And I had my own near-death experience.
Okay.
I was 31 years old, and I was having my fifth baby. I have five healthy babies, and I was at my due date. I was within a day or so of my due date, and my uterus, my stomach just cramped down into, it was rock hard. I could hit my stomach and nothing, you know, it was just so hard. And I followed an intuition, and that's one of the things I wanted to bring into our discussion, is how important our intuition is. And it had served me several times throughout this pregnancy, but it was just being put upon me that I really needed to get to the hospital. Now, I wasn't in any pain. I wasn't, you know, it was like, it was uncomfortable. This contraction stayed there. It didn't loosen up. It stayed so hard. And you know, after a while I thought, well, the baby might be getting uncomfortable. I know I'm uncomfortable.
Right.
So we went to the hospital. I brought my husband home from work, and you know, I told the nurse's desk in the best earth language that we have, I feel there is something wrong. You know, it's like, I don't know if I said I've been inspired to come here, you know, and they look at you like,
you're crazy, they're like, okay, send her to the top floor, psych ward.
But they said, well, technically you've only had one contraction. So, you know, you have had four babies. So you kind of know how this works, right?
Right.
You're early. And they said, why don't you go walk around and see if you can't get something going? Mm-hmm. And I didn't get 10 feet from the nurse's station. I walked around to the elevator.
Right.
And there was a wheelchair parked next to the elevator, and I sat in it. Mm-hmm. And my husband's looking at me like, what are you doing? You know, you're supposed to be walking around. Well, what are you doing? Uh-huh. And I said, I just don't feel I'm supposed to leave. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure why, but I just can't take another step further away from this place. Right. And after a few minutes, I went back. Mm-hmm. And I said, I don't know what it is, but I'm supposed to be here right mm-hmm. now. Mm-hmm. And she kind of went, well, we called your doctor, mm-hmm. told him not, you know, to roll over in bed, whatnot. It's going to take a while, but that you're here. And so kind of expect something mm-hmm. in the next few hours. And so they gave me a gown, and I went into the dressing room. And as I was putting this gown on, you know, the wonderful backless,
the
back.
Yeah.
And I noticed some drops of blood.
Oh.
And that was unusual, you know, and I rang the, I kind of, you know, oh no, what's going on?
Right.
And the nurse came in and said, oh, you're fine. You know, this is normal, blah, blah, blah. And just as she was talking to me, it was like a bucket of blood is the best way that I can describe it. And I'm going to be graphic here.
Yeah, that's okay.
It spilled, you know, those Homer buckets.
Yeah, yeah.
It's at least that much in the first initial drop.
Oh my goodness.
Everything down my legs, onto the
everywhere.
Floor, onto the nurse's legs, our shoes, the walls.
Yes. Yeah.
If you've seen The Shining and that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My kids love those kind of movies.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's what it was like. It was like, and yet I'm in no pain.
Right.
But this is.
Something is totally not right.
And the size of her eyes, you know.
Okay, good. And something had to happen. It seems like, I don't know what, sometimes with the medical profession, you want to slap them and shake them. I'm feeling something's not right. Could you at least check? You know?
Mm-hmm. So she just started yelling codes. And
good.
Me, there was a gurney nearby.
Yes.
And she pushed me down on that gurney, and people were running in and just couldn't believe this scene was like a war already.
Yes.
And
yes.
They finally got an intern, because again, they had called my doctor and said, it's going to be a while.
Go back to sleep. Yeah.
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 And there had been a baby delivered earlier. And so that doctor was gone now.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing was happening at the hospital at the time. So it was pretty much a vacant
hospital.
They were calling for everyone. Come, somebody come.
Yeah.
And again, I'm in no pain.
Pain.
I'll interject now, because sometimes in my story, I forget to tell that basically the blood was coming into my uterus, into the placenta. The placenta is a wonderful organ that feeds the baby, that regulates temperature and fluids and all of those things. It's totally necessary. It is a organ between the mother and the child, and it's very important.
Mm-hmm.
It was filling up with blood, but it was not, the blood for whatever reason was not exiting any longer. And so, or little of it was, and it continued to grow and expand. And when it got to a certain point that there was no way it could carry any more of the blood, it exploded.
Mm.
They called it living shrapnel inside of my body. It was everywhere.
Oh,
and it just, and then I was just bleeding out.
Mm-hmm.
When an intern entered the room and said, look, took one look and said, she's got 2 minutes of life left. This is, this is a big deal. Again, I'm thinking I'm dying and I'm not feeling pain. And it was the weirdest thing. You know, when you're in a situation and you're scared and you think, oh no, I'm going to die, or, you know, and you say those things or think those things.
I've been there. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yes. When someone else says, mm-hmm. you're dying, you mm-hmm. have, you know, a minute or so.
Yeah.
And I laid there and thought, so this is how it ends.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't a bus accident.
And you were how old? You were 30?
31.
31. Okay.
I had four kids at home.
I wasn't quite 30 when I had that similar, but
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm just thinking of, oh my goodness, what's going to happen? As I've got four little kids at home, and you know, there was also this twinge of excitement mm-hmm. because I knew that I was going to be seeing my dad.
Ah.
Well, I was like, well, you know, I don't have much say in what's happening right now, but I'm going to be seeing my dad. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to take the baby and get to the problem and fix me. There was no time or someone being able to give anesthesia. Right. So I'm in an examination room with no anesthesia, no warm blanket, we're talking about a 2 or 3 minute period from standing at the nurse's desk to a woman dying right there. So there was no time for anything but a scalpel, and he cut me from stem to stern, just pulled that gown aside and cut and started rifling through my body.
You mean from your belly button down, right?
No, but in that situation, he started right under the breast.
Lord Jesus.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. Because I had to have an emergency C-section with Kyle, and they did have time enough to put me under, because, okay, what I'll tell you real quick with Kyle is the cord was wrapped around his head. I was having a very, very, very easy delivery, mm-hmm. no anesthetic, no nothing, no pain, same like you. But when the baby started coming out, the cord was wrapped around his head. Aww. So literally the doctor, female doctor, jumped on the gurney, on the bed, and pushed Kyle back in and held him inside me. And they're rushing with this woman on top of me, holding Kyle in me. They're rushing to the ER because I was in the birthing room. I was going to have Kyle and go home the same day.
Yeah.
It was, yes. And so they're holding, and so they had to, but they did put they said count backwards and blah, blah, blah. And they had time enough to put me under the anesthesia, and they did an emergency C-section from my belly button down, they cut. But you go ahead. No anesthesia. I can't imagine no anesthesia. But
okay. It was, you know, and because I was so awake, right, mm-hmm. I hadn't even had an aspirin, you know, so I was watching everything because I thought, if these are my last few minutes, and they kept pulling the sheet up, you know, to kind of hide my eyes from what was happening. But I kept pulling the sheet down because
I would have been the opposite. I would have taken the sheet and going. Yeah, I would have been like this.
I was trying because I knew that, you know, the blood was coming out, you know, heartbeat and blood. And so I thought, stay calm, breathe calm. And maybe your heart won't beat as fast, and maybe it will give you them a little more time, you know,
to
whatever it was. So I was trying really hard to be calm.
That was a good thing. Yes.
But when he came in with the scalpel, and no one had even talked to me, and I'm not saying this anything against the medical profession, but when you are in that dire of a situation, they're not taking your hand and saying, and then next we're going to do this, and they're just doing it. And they're talking to each other, you know, trying to figure this out. And I was, my hearing was really becoming acute. I could hear them, but I could hear out in the hallway. I could hear rooms down the hallway. Each conversation, if I focused on it, that would be the conversation that I could hear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as you're bleeding out and I was losing my sight. Mm-hmm. It was getting real. The room was getting very dark. That your other senses pick up. Mm-hmm. And so I think part of that was that I could hear other things. But yeah, when they cut me and then they were moving parts to get to the baby, And I will tell you, that first cut, it stings. It's not horrible. It's not, you know, it's, I mean, it's horrible, but it stung like salt in a wound.
Okay.
Because that scalpel is so sharp.
Right.
And it moved so quickly and it was done. And I don't know, that's my best explanation, is it stung. It wasn't fun, but I thought to myself, oh my goodness, I knew, I'm pulling the sheet down, so I knew I was cut.
You are a brave woman. My eyes would be closed. I would not want to see, but I do know that frantic, what you're talking about, that frantic, because that's exactly what happened with Kyle when the cord came. They didn't want Kyle to strangle on the cord, so that's why they put him back in and held him. And on top of it, they didn't really say anything to me other than when they got me into the room, there's like count backwards when they put the, you know, trying to put me out. But wow.
Well, at that point when they started moving things, that's when pain, shivering, every cell in my body was screaming in pain. There was a nurse that was wrapping something gray around her arm and into her hand and around her arm. And I realized it was my intestines. And that hurt. That was really painful. All right. And I kept telling myself, faint, you know,
pass out. Leave like, you know, like, how much I do not want to be awake during this.
Yeah. And at that time I noticed the walls in the room, well, the ceiling had popped off. There was no longer a ceiling above me. It was sky, you know, it was night sky. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't see very well, but I could tell that the walls were becoming liquid-like, mm-hmm. and they were moving in. And I thought, because of how I had read about near-death experiences, I went, it must be the tunnel that is forming.
Right.
Oh my goodness, I'm going to be, dying. I'm going in the tunnel.
Yeah. And
to be so lucid throughout. To be, you know, to kind of know what was happening. And I don't know if I finished my thought, but I knew I was going to probably be seeing my dad soon. So I'm like, okay, I gave myself to it.
To it, right.
And when they were pulling the baby out and she was lifeless. Sorry, this is a hard part for me to talk about. But she had drowned in my blood. In the uterus. And when I saw that and heard, I mean, I knew, it was like, it was just too much. And I popped out of my body. It was there was pain. There was fear in that in front of death, but death itself was so easy. Mm-hmm. And so it was, it's nothing to fear. I mean, we fear the way we're going to go. But I wanted to express to your audience that, especially because I know your audience has lost their precious children, your precious child, that part of the suffering, that is not suffering. Mm-hmm. It is a quick pop. You know, those the toys the kids have, little boys, it's a little plastic thing and they put a ping pong ball in it and they pop and, and it's just that little soft pop. Mm-hmm. That is, or somebody explained it the other day, they said it was like when you're yawning and somebody pops a yawn.
Okay.
Have you ever had a pop a yawn? Has anyone ever done a pop a yawn to you?
No. I've never heard of Papa Yarn, but that's okay.
Yeah, when you're in the sun, basking in the sun, and you get a good open mouth, and someone walks and pops your yawn.
Okay.
It's terrible. It's terrible. Right. It changes the frequency or something. I don't know what it is, but it changes something. Right. So to me, that was a good explanation as well. And I found myself behind and upwards of my body and kind of looking at mostly my feet. It was, I saw, I saw what they were doing in the franticness, and then my little lifeless daughter that I didn't know was a daughter, because this was in 1984. So
that's the year Kyle was born.
Oh my goodness. Girl, we have so much in common. Yes. Oh my goodness. Yes. That I wasn't sure. It was just my baby. Mm-hmm. And I just had enough. And I could hear music playing in all of those different conversations and rooms. I heard this MASH theme. You know, that da 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 da.
I loved MASH, and I love the theme to that the theme to that show. Yes.
Yeah. It was just something happy in the moment or something of such grief of, because I did have that moment of in between just before I popped out of my body to know that my little child was lifeless, that that was just too much. And I guess that I heard the music and it was happier or something.
Right.
And I just kind of geared myself, floated through. I floated through the wall. I saw my husband filling out the insurance papers. He actually had his wallet and driver's license out and was writing down all these things. And I paused at him for a few moments and just thought, this is going to be hard. It's going to be hard on him and my four little ones. And, but that, it's amazing once you've lost your space suit, you know, it's everything changes. It's hard to explain, but there's not the grief and sadness of leaving yourself behind, because you're still you. Everything that was this Claudia was still there.
Yes.
So another point to tell the audience is, you don't lose yourself. You're going to be fine. All you did was took off your overalls and set them in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm floating, and I ended up in a gentleman's room, and I could tell that he didn't see me or notice me. And that's when I thought, oh my goodness, I must be dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this must be death. Right. And as soon as I thought that, I went to a place, and I'm careful with my words, maybe less careful now than I was at the time, because I went to a place, it was completely dark. Mm-hmm. It was black. I could see nothing. I don't know in that time frame if I had a body or an etherical body or a spirit body or a body of light. I could see nothing, but I felt everything. I was loved and cuddled, and this darkness was alive, and it was conscious, and it loved me unconditionally. It was vast. You know, somebody said you should call it the void, and it was like, but a void to me in limited earth language, when you're void of something, it's like something's missing or something, you know, it's not whole. And I was like, no, it wasn't void. It was everything. Mm-hmm. It was an everythingness. So anyway, it was funny, in a discussion, we came up with the word vastness.
Which I like that. As you're describing, I'm thinking it, and because I always use the yin-yang symbol as my ultimate visual of God, which is light and dark. See, being grounded in oneness, understanding that there is no separation from God. And when we think of God, we always light.
Mm-hmm.
That look at the yin-yang, I always tell people that symbol is God. God is light and dark.
Wow.
He's it all. So I love the fact that you're saying you were in this dark, but you felt everything. You didn't feel separate from light. You even though, that's perfect. That's perfect.
Yay.
Yes.
No fear. No, I mean, and I could have stayed there forever. I don't, maybe I did. I mean, because there's no sense of time, but I could hear someone calling my name, and it seemed like it was on this side of my body, and And it was the human voice. It was so irritating. Because I was in this peaceful, wonderful place. Yes. And it was like, I'm going, go away. And you're like, Claudia, your baby is alive. You need to come back to us. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, come back, Claudia. And I argued, you know, in my head, I'm like, what are they talking about? I saw my baby, you know? And so I thought in my, I guess, human mind, that if I spoke back and said, no, just go away and leave me alone, that they would. But as soon as I was trying to figure out how to voice something, mm-hmm. you know, I was back in my body and I was back in the pain. And everything. And someone was pressing oxygen. Yeah. I don't know what, but, so, you know, it's pretty, that time after coming back is quite vague for me because I was so void of blood that I had to have so many transfusions. To get back where I was even saved. And it was, again, it was in 1984 where they heard of AIDS and they knew that it was a blood disease, but they didn't know exactly how to look for it or how it was carried. And so I was in the hospital for weeks because they were still dealing with this shrapnel throughout me. But they would ask, they would say, I think we're getting to the point where we're going to let you just start manufacturing your own blood. And it's going to take a long time to heal. And I said, are you kidding me? With what I've just been through, if God wanted to take me through AIDS, it's like, it was, you know, when they call it the, and I've lost the words, but it is, blood is our life. I mean, our life's blood. Because as I was bleeding out, you know, I was going blind and everything. Well, as I was receiving the blood, the room would get brighter and I became like a vampire. I'd puff my pillows up and sit and wait for them to come, bring that bag and hook it in. Cause I knew I was getting that much closer to life again. So it was an interesting time and it took a long time. And I lay there and processing where I had been because I had not read anything like this in any NDE stories. Okay. You know, when you talk about I was in a darkness, it was like, well, most people, and unfortunately at the time, it was a teaching hospital and they did have some researchers come in. They called me, I was kind of famous in the hospital, they called me Pioneer Woman because I had gone through all of this with nothing. When they say, oh, it was the anesthesia talking or something, it was
she didn't have anything.
I was completely lucid.
Yes.
So they really wanted to hear what, you know, me to try and express what pain felt like.
Right.
And then they, you know, and they had their clipboard and they're writing things down, asking me questions, but I had no earth words for. How do you describe that deep of pain for one thing?
Right.
I mean, I'm like, it really hurt. You know, it sounds so there's just no way.
Right.
And the other was, you know, did you see anyone? Did you what did you feel? What did you see? What did you hear? You know, and when I started to talk about being in this darkness, there was a look that came across one of the researchers' face that had asked the question, and it was like she was so disappointed in my answer or something. It was something maybe somebody else may not have even noticed, but I saw a disapproval or something that I can't explain, and it was like, well, we're not going to get nothing from this girl, you know, I don't know, something like that. But I was trying to express something so sacred to this experience. I mean, it was mine. And I was like, and I'm trying to use my words to describe something that's indescribable, and I'm getting a feeling of disapproval. And I thought,
it almost a judgment, because you said darkness, and because that's the thing, because we are in society, we are trained to think dark is bad. Light is, the light is good and dark is bad, which is all, it's all God. There's nothing separate from God. And so she obviously, or the person that was asking you the question, did not have that understanding that there is no dark. There is, there is just, there's just God. And God can come in any form God wants to appear, because it's all God. There is nothing but God. So that person was not understanding that. So they had that look of disapproval, but it's all good. Well,
what that did to me, and again, this is 1984. And so there was some near death out there, and everybody talked about going to the light. The tunnel was light. They met grandma. They, you know, whatever. They had beautiful stories. And I lay there in this bed for weeks.
Right.
Trying to figure out, why was my experience, I mean, I was told you're dead, you were dead, you know, so it wasn't even a dream or nightmare type thing. And I thought, what's wrong with me that that was my experience? And now I can't even talk about it without fear of someone judging me negative, and perhaps am I not a good person? Why didn't I see the why didn't I see my dad? You know, it was like, I think my mother even was waiting for some kind of a message, you know, from the other side, from dad.
Yeah.
And I had nothing to offer. And so I had that time in the hospital to push my experience down. It was too precious to talk about,
right,
and risk someone soiling it with that another of those expressions. So I did that for 25 plus years. Okay. I didn't talk about it. Raised my children, married, you know, had my life, my five precious children, because again, my daughter survived.
And she's the same age as Kyle.
Well, it's her little twins. She lives with me because she's saving for a home, and so she's working and doing everything.
Your daughter is the one that has twins.
Oh,
amazing. And your twins are what, five?
Six. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome.
Girl and boy. Yeah.
Awesome.
And so they are my life, and that's what I do all day long while she's at work. And there might have been other things I wanted to do in my retirement years.
That's okay. Everything happens in perfect.
Exactly. In perfect. Yes. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So, you know, I felt like I was kind of wandering through the desert of of my own personal questions, and I would, you know, really contemplate sometimes, but I didn't talk about it. And I would still, I continue to read other experiences and that. And I was compelled to go to an IONS conference, and Dr. Eben Alexander was speaking. He was the main speaker, and I had seen him on TV. And I, so long story that I won't get into, I ended up at a luncheon across like kitty corner from Dr. Alexander. And this was before his first book was on the market. He had about six more weeks before it was out. And so I had heard his near-death experience from the TV, but he had added certain other things that, and that's another thing with download. Don't pick on when you hear an experience and then you hear them again, and there's things that are added to it.
Right.
Because we're constantly, things will come out in dreams, or a memory or a piece of it comes bubbling up in your, and it's like, oh my goodness. Well, this was happening to Dr. Alexander. And the thing that perked my ears to listen to what he was saying was that he didn't see his father when he, when he died. And he would have, he said, I would have, you know, expected that and did expect that. And it didn't happen for me. And here's this guy, you know, that is given voice to me with the same time, you know, he was in a darkness, and that's
I was reading his book, and I think that's the only book of his that I read, which was the first one, Proof of Heaven. Mm-hmm. I was actually reading that book while in the hospital with Kyle, but not when Kyle transitioned.
Okay.
The chapter I wore, which is 3 years before Kyle's transition. That was in 2011. And I was reading his book because I'm in the hospital with Kyle, and I read his book from cover to cover while I was in the hospital in 2011. I should have put that. If I didn't put that in the chapter, it should be in the chapter. That should be in my chapter.
You'll be writing a book one of these days.
Yeah. Well, I've started.
Yeah.
I've started. Yes.
And it all comes when it's time, right?
Yes. Perfect divine timing. Yes. But
I kept asking, I kept questioning, how come? And I would pray, and I would be reverent and, you know, on my knees. And there were times when I cried, and there were times when I got kind of mad, said, excuse me, I went through this thing.
Right.
Help me out here. Help me explain. And my first book is called Gifts from the Edge. Mm-hmm. And it basically, I should have brought it, but I'm standing on a cliff looking out into the everythingness,
right,
and going, help me understand, help me, you know, was there a purpose to my NDE? Because it's like, you know, people come back, they have a wonderful story to share, they speak, they give talks, they give podcasts, they write books, you know, and it is helping so many people, right? It's offering service. And for me, you know, I'm not saying a darn thing. And it was like, let me serve. What, you know, and so I actually got really mad one night, and I was yelling, going, you know, why have I been walking in this darkness for so long, kind of just treading through the desert? And I heard, what did it prompt? And I just thought, I don't know, it didn't even seem unusual to have heard that, you know. I answered back, and I'm still got my hands on my hips, you know. Going, what did it prompt? Well, I've been studying, I've been reading, I listened to every talk that, you know, I'm out there,
right.
Even at this conference that I was so lucky to meet so many wonderful people, I had been put in as an experiencer. I hadn't filled out my own form. And you wear a lanyard around your neck that says, it's so that they can identify those who have had experiences and those who were guests or there to hear the speakers. Right. Well, I kept turning my lanyard around that said experiencer, because I didn't want anyone to ask me, because it's like my story was so incomplete.
Right.
So I, at that point, and that's, I wanted to say to your audience, don't give up, because as you so eloquently have said, everything is in its time.
Yes.
And soon after, I mean, they must have thought, okay, this student's ready, you know. And they started sending me dreams. And just to back up, what they started sending me is, while I was in dream, I would notice something weird on the side of, you know, I'm looking at myself and the people in my dreams, and over here is something distracting. And it was the first night that I noticed it, that I really was like, okay, look out of the dream, and what's going on up here? Allowed me to kind of step out of my dream, but I was still asleep,
right?
And I'm looking at this guy, and I say guy because he had a beard, but he was in a fairy costume. In this visual, he was in this little pink, you know, in the tutu thing with a wand and a hairy back and beard, and had a little stubby cigar. And I'm like, what is going on here?
Right.
But it, as he, do you remember the old Bullwinkle and Rocky show? I'd watch that on Saturday mornings, and they had one of their little vignette cartoons things was called Fractured Fairy Tales.
Okay.
Well, he's floating up here, and he's touching his wand to I don't even know what to call it, but the easel that had, you know, and the, it would, you'd directed by, written by, music by. Well, right. This one, he touched this board and he said, talk to your family. Mm. And it was all sparkles and fancy mm-hmm. work. I mean, he did a good job. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was my spirit guide, if I haven't mentioned that. It yes. was, I've come to know it was my spirit guide.
Okay.
But he needed a way to wake me up, so to mm-hmm. speak. He was mm-hmm. there. And he would do this almost on a nightly basis. He would use different costumes. Okay. And I would pull out of a regular dream and he would take me to what I started calling spirit school.
Oh, okay.
And this was a safe place for me within dream and sleep, because, you know, people have different ways of recall in meditation. And I had five little kids, you know, mm-hmm. it's like there's my precious time is my sleep time. Right. And I've grown to, you know, when I go to sleep, it's like, okay, everybody, I'm calming down, you know, give me something, you know, mm-hmm. I'm going to sleep.
Right.
And I don't mean it as a lazy man's way, but you know, that was what worked for me.
Yes.
I appreciate those who can meditate, and I'm seriously, I try to. I could be so much better at it than I am, but I'm still receiving wonderful inspirations. I receive parables, I receive mm-hmm. metaphor stories, and those are what I write about in my books.
Don't be so hard on yourself.
Okay.
You're everything. Everything happens in perfect divine timing and perfect divine order. Each of us is a unique, extremely unique aspect of all that is. And we're going to experience our awakening and our lessons and why we're here. We're going to experience in a totally unique way than anybody else. That's so don't true. Be beating yourself. What I'm hearing is you're beating yourself up for receiving it the way you've received it, because it wasn't like other people received
there you go.
It's not supposed to be like other people receive it. You receive it the way you uniquely are meant to receive it. So stop beating
all right.
yourself up.
All right. Well, you know, and I've explained it too, is when you're over there and you have this vast ocean of knowledge, right? Yes. Everything is makes sense. You know, it's like it's simplicity and it's enormous all at the same time. And you go, oh my goodness, of course that's why this is happening and that's happening. Yes. And it all makes sense. But when you come back to our beautiful, wonderful bodies, but right. they're limited, yes. you know, and this little brain, whatever that we have in there, it's like, we'd explode if we, you know, to bring back everything. So I understand that that my experience, basically, I got a paper cup and I got to scoop a little bit of that ocean. Mm-hmm. And what I have been doing for the last 35 years now is examining every drop in that paper cup, and every drop is full of God, full of love, full of information, and it the vastness of the ocean, it can be contained in that in yes. that paper cup that I was allowed to bring back. But
well, I love that you mentioned the ocean, because I know my regular listeners have heard me say this. My favorite quote is by Rumi: you're not a drop in the ocean. You are the entire ocean in a drop. Each one of us, we're not a piece of God. We are all of God in a drop. And yes, this limited human mind, which only basically operates from what we've learned in this particular lifetime, extremely limited, can't even hold that truth. Mm-hmm. But you know where it is? It's the heart.
Yeah.
The heart is 1,000, 10,000, 1,000,000 times more powerful and more intelligent than this monkey. I call it the monkey mind.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the heart. I've heard that.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. And if we could, as you say, we're all God. If we could look at how could I mistreat? I mean, there have been horrible things in the news today. And how could I ever treat another person if I knew that they were God, that I was committing this act to God?
Exactly. It's funny that? You say that, because again, I'm going to say another thing my listeners know. I stopped watching news September 2001. I have not watched a second, not one second of news. And it was, you say intuition, I call it my higher self. My higher self told me in September 2001 to turn off that news and never turn it back on. Now, that's the first time. I've always been, since childhood, I've been very obedient, listening to my inner guidance, my higher self, Holy Spirit, whatever name people want to give it. But we all have that. And I've always been extremely obedient. And when that download came to me, it was like the first time my higher self yelled at me from within, not outside of me, but from within me, turn off that news and don't ever turn it back on again. Wow. And I said, almost like you with the shoulders like that. I didn't put my hands on the hips like that. I just said, why? And I didn't get an answer till 11 years later, but I was obedient. I turned off that news September 2001 and has never been. And even if I'm in a place where there's a waiting room, like the car is getting repaired and the news is on, I've got to go out. I can't allow myself to listen to it.
Just bombarding.
It's frequency. It's the frequency. And then I found that was my answer that I got 11 years later. It is a deliberate low frequency. And it's even not just the words and the things that they're reporting on and saying. It's even there's a frequency that's coming from that television news station that is literally deliberately trying to lower your frequency. Mm. And we create our reality from frequency. So my higher self wanted to protect me from that early on so I could do the work that I'm doing now. Wow. And I felt, like I said, it was 11 years later, I learned exactly, that's why you wanted me to turn. So I have not watched news in over, 21 years now?
Wow.
Yeah, 22. Yeah, it's 2022. Wow. I forget the year. But I know, here's the thing, because people will say to me, it drives me crazy, where people say, well, how do you know what's going on in the world? My answer to that is, I know what's going on in the world because I don't watch the news.
Ah, wow. That's cool. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about the internet?
I'm on the internet all the time, but see, I watch what I
you go. Yeah,
I watch what resonates with me on, like, since since I've discovered YouTube. I forget how long ago. I think I've had my own personal YouTube channel because I like to edit videos and whatnot since 06. And then I got a new channel for my podcast in 2015 when I started my podcast. So, but as far as I find things that resonate with me. I'm not saying, because it's not like, it's all about resonance with me. If something resonates,
and when you can feel it, know.
It's not here, it's here. Mm-hmm. It's the heart.
Yeah. The reason I asked that, or was I interrupting?
No.
The reason I asked that is because, you know, so many people say, I'm just turning off Facebook and all this stuff. And it's like, just watch what groups you join or who you interact with. Because for me, the internet was a lifeline to be able to find the Dr. Eben Alexander,
right,
or the Claudia Edges.
Yes.
You know,
you say that because I said I was reading, and I've had Dr. Eben Alexander on as a guest, but I was reading his book, Proof of Heaven, while I was in the hospital. And I can't remember how I found it, but obviously I must have found it on the internet. And then my first show was with Robert Schwartz, who wrote Your Soul's Gift and Your Soul's, I have both books over there. Your Soul's Gift is the second book. Your Soul's Plan. Your Soul's Plan is his first book, and Your Soul's Gift is his second book. Now, this time, so now we're 3 years later, I'm back in the same hospital, Kyle on life support. And this is when Kyle does transition. But I was while Kyle's on life support, I Googled Your Soul's Plan, and the book popped up. And I literally was emailing back and forth with Robert Schwartz while Kyle was still on life support. But I knew that what I was going through was a soul plan. I knew that from my experience 3 years earlier, and I had made that promise to God, you read the chapter, that I would never, ever stop thanking him. So even while I'm in the hospital 3 years later with Kyle and he doesn't come home, I still, when Kyle transitioned, I was still thanking God. I didn't ever break that promise. And I knew, I was like, okay, this is a soul plan. And I'm like, okay, I wanted to find out more about soul plan. And that's how I discovered Robert Schwartz. And he was my first guest on my show, which I started my show 6 months after Kyle's transition.
So you took this tragedy, this awfulness, and turned it into something so beautiful, but also, I mean, because service is so beautiful, but it's like it's relayed to you, you are a foot soldier in this journey. We're in fact, one of the, if I can remember it, because I heard soldier, hello soldier, in that between wake and yes. sleep and awake, and you're in that transition in the morning, and I heard hello soldier. Yes. And I went in that, I was like, soldier, you know, what do you mean by that? And it said, boots on the ground where celestial pavement ends. This came to me, and I went, I will be a soldier. I will be a foot soldier for God.
Yes. I truly believe. I think of myself as is similar to that, but it's the ground crew.
The ground crew while you're putting your spacesuit on and all of that, right? Yes, and for this, our adventure.
Yep.
Our walkabout.
Yes.
In the universe.
The latest download that I got from Higher Self was 2 years ago, March of 2020, when the download was humanity's great awakening has begun.
Oh, I love
and it. That began 2 years ago. And I'm thinking, my other thing is like, I thought it would be like, we'd be over it by now. But I always reminding myself, perfect divine timing, perfect divine order, not in my monkey mind timing.
Right.
So I was like, okay, but I'm on top of the world because humanity awakening is happening. And we are the ground crew in that great awakening. There had to be some people on the ground, you know, boots on the ground. Right. During the especially the beginning of the Great Awakening. So
that's awesome.
I
was trying to think back how we even connected. And just to bring this back.
Lions.
Absolutely.
Yes.
But there's a divine nudge.
Yes.
Push and whatever. And I had written two books, my Gifts from the Edge and Lessons from the Edge, of my spirit school.
Mm-hmm.
But I was soaking in the bathtub, the warm water. I put bubbles in
lavender. Don't you just love it? Soaking in the bathtub. But also, you have to put sea salt in there. Any kind of Himalayan sea salt or sea salt, because soaking in a salt bath, even with your bubbles and but you have to have some salt in there because the salt literally raises your frequency.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes.
I'm laying there and I just have a divine inspiration that there's a third book. Now, I wrestled with the first two. It's like, what do you mean I'm supposed to write a book? And then it was like, what do you mean I'm supposed to write a second book? Mm-hmm. And I was helped so much. And those are so much me.
Yes.
That they're my babies. But when I heard there's another book and I went, oh my goodness, you know, what am I supposed to be writing about? Mm-hmm. But through my experiences as I heard people's stories or read them online, I would write down, I would either do a clip, you know, and grab it and, you know, copy it. Right. And I would put it in a folder. But I don't know why, just for, you know, going back, reflection, whatever.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, you mean go through the folder? You know, this is, this was like, this book is to be written by everyday people, their experiences, people who might not have already written a book, but have a beautiful story to tell. And I started to go through my folders and I'm gonna hold it up again for your audience. And, and you know, I could act like I'm a salesman or something.
I love it.
There is an inspiration to bring this, you know, forthcoming, and that, sorry, I hear the garage door open and I'm like, oh no, the six-year-olds are on their way up.
The six-year-olds are getting in the car and going downtown.
my alone time is over. Shut my door here. But there are 40, and just to follow my point, I do not, spiritual writing, podcasts, we don't do this for the money. There's no money in it. I spent more getting these books, paying for people to do my cover and lay it out and, you know, everything it takes to print a book. But what I do, because there are so many magical people, and in this book, there are 47 contributors. I give these books away. I take them to hospitals. I give them to prisons. I give them to doctors. I've given them to dentists. Because I don't ever want anyone to treat someone who's had a near-death experience with the same kind of disapproval. Lack of understanding. And the words that are used are lack of or gap of care, excuse me.
Right.
The military is a huge gap of care, from waking up from a helicopter crash and they can't talk about anything. You know, they've been shot on the battlefield, whatever, and they've had an amazing experience and they don't dare talk about it. They're going to end up in the loony bin. So your program, my books, that is our, foot soldierness out there. So when I hold up my precious book that I I'm holding up.
I'm a contributing author.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Her Miracle on 34th Street is amazing. And give you these, this celebrated collection comes from decorated military veterans, medical doctors, nurses, healers, hospice workers, therapists, psychologists, hypnotherapists, authors, teachers, podcasters, musicians, a NASA scientist, marine biologist, a chaplain, minister, funeral director, and real estate agent, screenplay writer, sorry, just a few more, a newspaper columnist, and several PhDs who have given their entire lives in this service. So when I say buy this book, it's amazing. Caroline's story alone is worth the purchase, and the this money goes to buy more books to put out there. It is a continuing circle, and I wanted, it's important for me, because every now and again I see something in the comments, you know, it's like, oh, another new ager, you know, trying to push their agenda and make some more money on their books. And I'm like, make some more money on their books. It's like,
no, but here's
I don't know anybody.
I pretty much, I don't get a lot of negative comments, but I kind of ignore them, because I'm like, they're not just thinking, I don't look upon them, the people that make it, as judgments. I said they're just not awake, they're not understanding. Because when you truly are awake, honestly, money is not a factor. We all have bills to pay, but that is, money is so low on the totem pole once you wake up. And I had that, my real awakening was in 2007. Then another aspect of that awakening when Kyle transitioned in 2014. And so it's, for me, it's just all about living my truth and sharing my truth with the world. It's never about money. And I know that's the same for you, but let's talk about Irons.
All right.
2022. Oh, my God. I didn't think, what year are we in?
Because so many of the contributors to the book are from Irons. There is a conference in Salt Lake City this year.
Yes.
And if you've never, in fact, try to find some of the videos from IONS.
Right.
They have
go to their YouTube channel. They have a YouTube channel, which is great.
Right.
Yes.
But in conference, so many people come to that same hotel, wandering around the hallways, both speakers, authors, experiencers and seekers all together.
Yes.
And the vibration,
it's amazing. Like
the roof just lifts off that hotel.
Yes.
It gives me goose pimples every time I think about what I felt at my first IONS conference.
Yes.
And in fact, there were some of the guests at the hotel that I was staying with that actually asked the people at the desk, who are those people? What is going on? And one gal that we met was driving her car. She was running away from a bad situation with her husband or something and trying to.
Don't go anywhere. I'm just going to open the door, but I don't want, because I want to finish. Don't go anywhere. Stay right
there.
So sorry about that. No. I want to finish up. I'm having such a great time talking to you. Totally lost track of the time. And my student's always early. He's always early. So it's okay. He's waiting outside for me.
Well, but, I'll just wrap up that thought that she.
Well, I wanted to piggyback on that. You were saying, I wanted to tell my first IONS. My first IONS was, since I've been doing the show, I've been to many, many, many conferences, 2 or 3 conferences a year. My first IONS was 2019. And it was so close. I had just heard about IONS. I was invited to come to be pressed that year. And it was only a 2-hour drive. It was in Philadelphia. So I'm like, okay, this I can do. This is doable. That conference blew me away. It just puts all the other conferences to shame, in my opinion.
Wow.
And I understood why. Because the experiencers, the near-death experiencers, and the any kind of spiritual experiencers, they have experienced the truth of oneness. They know what it is, even if they can't put it into words. They know what oneness truly is. And so to be at an IONS conference is to be surrounded by your tribe that is the foot soldiers. By your awakened foot soldiers that are here with the same message, really. Even though we're all unique aspect of the divine, so we're sharing that message uniquely differently, because we are supposed to. We're not cookie cutters. We're not supposed to be the same. But to that knowing, the knowing of oneness, the knowing of unconditional love, that is where you go to an IONS conference, and that is what you experience.
To walk down those hallways and you and I haven't had a chance to embrace.
We will.
I know. I'm so excited this year. We will in Salt Lake City.
And I have to let my listeners know, because I haven't even told them yet. I mean, I have been, like I said, 2019, I was there with a press pass. 2020 and 2021, which were online conferences, I was on panels for each of those. I was on a panel that really spoke
to me.
I was on the first panel was spoke to you know, grieving parents. And then the second panel last year, I was on another panel, and I forget, that was more focused on spirituality. So, but I was always on a panel. This year, they invited me to be a featured speaker because of the title of the theme is Timeless Oneness. And so, and they, even when they invited me, they're like, you get it. I'm like, yeah, oneness, I get it. Yes, yeah. So this is my first year as a featured speaker for IONS in Salt Lake City. And it is August 31st to September
4th,
or something like that. Yes. Yeah. I cannot wait. And I will get to meet you in person. Give you a big hug. Yes, yes, yes.
Yes.
Yes. This has been so wonderful.
If you don't mind posting there, I believe it's IONS.org.
Yes. Yes.
Please know that I'm available to talk to. I'm at ClaudiaEdge.com.
Yes.
You could reach me through my website. You can see YouTubes and what of my different talks where we go into a few more of my own personal experiences. But
awesome.
Please know that the internet and the websites and the speeches and that helped me find my voice.
Yes.
And so I honor your podcast. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for letting me
share my experience. Bye, We Touched Heaven.
Yes. Love it. you won't be able to put it down. And all the links will be below in this video.
There'll awesome.
Be links to your website, links to IONS, and links to the conference, the IONS conference for this year. Where if anyone's listening, if you want to meet us both, come to the IONS conference.
And anybody who needs a hug out there, there are plenty of them going around there. I swear that is such a wonderful place to be.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. This has been amazing. Love you. We're going to stay in touch, and I'll definitely see you in Salt Lake City.
Sounds great. Bye, audience. Okay. Thanks for hanging here with us.
No problem. Bye for now.
Bye.
Can't find the off button. Hold on.